Good morning. It is Kale and Company live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Great to have you with us on this Thursday morning. And we are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Northeast Delta Dental has individual and family plans designed to fit your lifestyle. You can learn more and find your plan at DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. And happy to say that joining us in studio today, we have State Senator Howard Pearl. Good morning, Senator Pearl.
Good morning, Ken. How are you today?
I'm doing well. But even better than that, we we have his wife, Heather, with us today.
Aww.
And Heather celebrated a birthday yesterday. And according to all reports that I've seen, you celebrated in style yesterday.
Apparently I did.
Yeah. Well, that's
being
the way
29 again, you know.
Yeah, I know. For the second time anyway, right?
Yeah. Quite a few.
But at any rate, they are from, of course, a great place in Loudoun, the Pearl Farm and Pearl and Sons Farm, 409 Loudoun Ridge Road in Loudoun. It's a wonderful spot. And this weekend is Maple Weekend.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Sap houses are all around the state will be open, and it's our annual event. Gosh, I don't remember what year it is. We've got to be approaching 30 now that we've done this. And there's information available on the New Hampshire Maple Producers Association website. I'm trying to remember, www.newhampshiremapleproducers.com, I believe, and you can go there find a listing of sugar houses around the state that are open. And, yeah, it's going to be a great event. We'll have a lot of fun. Hopefully the weather's going to cooperate. You know, we've had a pretty warm March here, so it's been a little challenging to know how long the season's going to go. We may be getting near the end already, but we're doing our best to keep going.
Yeah.
And now, Heather, before you met Howard, how much did you know about the maple syrup business or sugaring business and the production of it? Did you have extensive knowledge in that before you met Howard?
Not a thing. Nothing. I knew nothing until I met that man.
He's a
great teacher, though.
I bet you've learned a lot.
I have. This is my third maple season with him, and we've just grown. From that first year that I was with him, and then we started adding other little great treats to his already great maple syrup. So this year it'll just be another addition to a great experience.
I have some great maple treats.
I know you
right
do.
In front of me.
Wow. Yes, you do.
Yeah, that is terrific, and thank you for those. And so it's been a learning experience for you.
Yeah.
So how is the Pearl and Sons Farm going to commemorate Maple Weekend?
Oh my gosh, we have great maple syrup.
Can attest to that personally. Yes.
I can too, because I put it in my tea. Getting away from sugar and putting maple syrup into my tea. But we have all sizes of maple syrup in quarts, gallons, pints. We also have great maple lollipops and maple fudge and maple peanut butter fudge.
Maple brittle.
Maple cream. Brittle that has almonds in it. And then we have brittle that has walnuts in it. And then just plain brittle. And then we'll also have maple glass. A lot of bakers like to use the maple glass and put it on treats and pastries and I also melt it and put it on my chicken or put it in my pork recipes, and I like to make a maple mustard glaze
salmon we had for dinner.
Salmon. He put it on salmon for my dinner
maple
last night.
Maple glaze
my birthday
salmon?
Dinner.
Wow.
It was delicious. He made a nice maple mustard
maple
glaze.
Cranberry mustard.
Oh, yeah,
wow,
maple
nice.
Cranberry. Oh, wow. It was delicious. But if you add other caramelized onions and everything to that, oh my God, it was so delicious. I love working with the maple product and trying to, utilize it in other things that I love to cook. So it's a great natural sugar.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about that. Gosh. No doubt about it. So,
I'm getting hungry just talking about it.
I know I am. Just listening to it. So what hours are you going to be open this weekend so people can stop by and visit? I know you're open almost every day anyway,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Our set hours are 10 to 3 Saturday and 11 to 3 on Sunday.
Okay.
We're trying to mix around a few other events that are also occurring this weekend. We've got town meeting days on Saturday and obviously St. Patrick's Day on Sunday. So
yeah,
we're going to be open those hours. But we're hoping to hoping the weather cooperates. I don't know what things are going to look like yet, but it doesn't look too bad. Especially Saturday looks like a decent day.
Now, you have 275 acres.
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah,
a little more than that, but. Right in that area.
And I'm told anyway that it has become a proving ground for a maple industry innovation.
Well, we aren't always on the spearhead, but we're certainly working on trying to make sure that we stay current because it's important. Technology is, and I'm working with another farm now. I'm getting older. My legs aren't as good as they used to be either.
Howard, you're still a young man.
Yes,
you're
he
still
is.
A young man, Howard.
So spring
there's,
chicken.
I'm working with another farm with a couple of younger guys next door, and they're experimenting with some things as well, and it's really fun to do that. It's a great time. I'm managing part of the bush myself, and they're doing part, and it's really interesting to watch their energy and excitement. I mean, the next generation is key. You know, having a maple orchard is a multi-generational commitment. It takes at least 40 years to grow a tree big enough to even tap.
Mm.
And so to get a mature orchard, you're looking at, you know, the 80 to 100 years, which is going to exceed most of our working ability anyway. So I'm working on trees that my grandfather and great-grandfather, areas that they thinned, and my dad and myself. And so that next generation is critical to continue to further the good work that we've done on the farm.
Now, I'm sure a lot of people don't realize that. I certainly did not. It takes 40 years to grow a tree that will produce the sap that it requires?
Yeah, the recommended size for tapping, which is about the size of the base of a bucket at chest high, so a sap bucket. So, that, basically 8 to 10 inches is kind of what you're looking for. Now, sometimes we'll tap smaller ones with the newer technology we're using now. So the old buckets, that recommendation was based on when they would drill the 7/16 hole in the tree. We're now only drilling quarter-inch holes.
Oh.
And through the use of new design of spouts, that the part that goes in the tree, and then the addition of vacuum, we can actually extract as much or more sap from that hole as we could the bigger hole. So the smaller the wound, the better the tree health.
So the technology obviously has evolved
significantly,
considerably over the years.
I would say if my grandfather walked in my sugar house now, he would have no idea how to boil sap.
Yeah, probably not.
I still don't.
You still don't.
I still don't.
After all these years.
Yeah, it's oh my god. It looks like a steam engine.
Yeah.
It's just
it is an amazing technology.
Yeah.
It truly is. But it boggles my mind that it takes 40 years to grow a tree before it matures that you're able to get something out of it.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's a long-term commitment.
I guess it is. So after those 40 years, I mean, how many more years do you get to tap that tree?
Well, these trees can live well north of 100 years.
Okay.
And, depending on the environment and the weather conditions, that where they are, wind exposure certainly can do damage to them. But there's many trees that would probably be in excess of 150 years. So there's a long period there where they're productive. But again, there's a few factors that kind of depends on how they survive.
So how many trees do you have on your property?
I have no idea.
Oh, you have no idea? Oh, okay. But
I can tell you, we tap around, there's probably at least 10,000 maple trees.
Wow.
There's a few 000. Other species there.
10,000?
Yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot.
On one farm.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Well, the whole of Loudoun Ridge is blessed to have good soils for growing maple trees.
Yeah.
And so there's several of us producers that line across Loudoun Ridge. So, just to put a plug in for our community there for this weekend.
Yeah.
There's at least, I'm trying to think, I'm probably missing somebody. At least, I believe there's 5 sugar houses open on Loudoun Ridge Road, or yep, right on the general Loudoun Ridge area, that you can come spend some time. And, you know, while we're all doing the same thing, there's unique differences. So I would encourage people to hit the ridge.
Yeah.
Wow. That is amazing. Yeah, no doubt about that. And the Pearl and Sons Farm is at 409 Loudoun Ridge Road in Loudoun. But you encourage people to visit the other farms as well.
It's a great community. It really is.
Seems to be. That's good that you can work together.
We do.
In harmony, anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They all work together. It's pretty cool.
Unlike radio stations. No, I'm only kidding, folks.
Oh, boy.
Only kidding. We're all in this together.
Right.
But Heather, you've learned a lot about the maple business over the years, and you'll be greeting customers over the weekend as well.
I will be there. Unfortunately, I won't be there Saturday, but I will be there Sunday.
Oh, okay.
Yes, bright and early.
Very good. Very good. So stand by. We'll be back with more. We'll talk more about the Maple Weekend and the technology and how it's evolved over the years, right here, Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, with Heather and Howard Pearl this morning on Kale and Company Live. Stay with us. Welcome back, Kale and Company Live, here on WKXL. NHTalkRadio.com, presented by our good friends at Northeast Delta Dental. And by the way, tomorrow's Friday Fun Bunch is going to be on Facebook Live. All you have to do is go to Facebook, WKXL, NH Talk Radio, and you will be able to see tomorrow's show featuring Kitty Ray, our resident flick chick, and Tom Raffio, president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental. Howard, I'm just sorry that we don't have Facebook Live today, and so we could, people could see Heather, who had to leave, unfortunately, because she had other business to attend to today. But Howard, as a state senator, has very flexible hours, right? You're only up at 4 o'clock in the morning, right?
Well, some days that is required.
Yeah, but at any rate, we're talking about, at least for this portion of the program, Maple Weekend, which is coming up this Saturday and Sunday, and it will be certainly commemorated at Pearl and Sons Farm, 409 Loudoun Ridge Road in Loudoun. There are other farms up there as well, and Howard encourages you to visit them as well. And I saw on the Concord Insider today in the monitor a picture of some horses and collecting sap with draw horses. Is that something that probably is not done very frequently these days?
I don't believe there's too many locations still doing it that way, but it certainly is the history of every maple farm in the state. My grandfather did the, I still had the old scoot that he pulled and for a long time, and some of the gear for the horses, the hitches, and they had multi-team hitches for doing field work, and it's kind of neat to look at. And Heather and I are going to work at some point in trying to get some of that stuff displayed, having an area to do it.
That would be. Is there a farm museum in New Hampshire at all?
There are. Yeah. I mean, certainly Sanborn Mills Farm is the one you were talking about that was in the Insider. They're a working farm, but they very much kept the old ways, and they do classes on blacksmithing and different older aspects of agriculture. It's a neat place to visit.
Because it would be amazing to see the evolution of farming equipment over the years.
That's a great place to go. They still have a water-powered sawmill and grist mill, and they had one of the first generators, at least in this area, and maybe even in the state, that was water-powered to electrify the farm. And I don't know if that is still intact or not. I don't recall on that one, but it's a neat place to go, and certainly I believe they will be open this weekend as well. Mm-hmm. Again, there's sugar houses all around the state that will be.
Yeah, absolutely, and we encourage you to visit them, because so many people, and I include myself in this, that don't know exactly what's going on and what's manufactured by local people here in the state of New Hampshire. And the more you know about it, I think the more that you appreciate this state and all it has to offer.
Oh, definitely. You know, and agriculture is still a major part of our communities. Yeah. There's still a lot of rural New Hampshire that is here. You know, our sugar production from maple back in the 1800s was significantly higher than what we're producing even today.
Wow.
Because they didn't have white sugar as an alternative, so that was not this far north, and so that was the major sweetening staple back in the 1800s.
Yeah, and the great work continues today. The technology obviously has changed considerably, but the product remains delicious.
It does. That it does.
It really does. And you told us, for those who missed the earlier segment today, that you can get sap out of a tree for like 60 years?
Oh, probably. Maybe most trees, more than 100 you could.
More than 100?
Yeah.
More than 100 years.
I am certainly tapping some trees on the farm that my great-grandfather tapped, and you know, at least 100 years ago.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That is truly amazing. So, you know, people say that know about these things. I'm certainly not one of them. But they say, well, this will be, you know, when the winter rolls around, this will be a good winter for, you know, maple sugaring and that sort of thing. What is the best weather for what you do?
Sure. So we are looking for the 25 at night, 45 during the day. It's kind of what I always throw out as the numbers, the target numbers. Now, obviously, it can be 28 and 50, but we're looking for a freeze at night and then a good warming during the day. That prompts that sap to come from the roots up to through the tree and up to feed those buds. And, you know, with our tap hole, we're taking a small percentage of what that tree has, and that's how we make maple syrup, as we extract that sap through the small hole that we drill in the tree.
And so how was this winter?
This winter's been very warm.
Yeah.
We could have actually started back in January, and you know, we have a lot of discussions about the changing climate, especially as it relates to maples. And, you know, people talk about you can sugar so much earlier than you used to. Well, some of that certainly is attributed to whatever the weather is for that year. Some of it, too, is the changing in technology that we have. So when we were tapping just straight sap buckets with the open spile, those holes would really stay open about 6 weeks. The air would start to get in the bacteria, and it would cause the tree to wall off that hole and kind of heal up, kind of like a cut on your finger does. Mm-hmm. But with the new tubing technology, and especially where we're able to pull a vacuum on it, we can keep that from occurring for about 10 weeks. So it allows us to tap a little bit earlier than we used to and still be comfortable that we're going to be there, you know, in March when traditionally the vast majority of your crop is made.
Yeah. How much tubing do you have on the farm in all? I saw a stat reading an article here that was published a while back, 450,000 feet of tubing.
Yes. That's essentially what's there.
In that vicinity,
It's just shy of 90 miles of pipe on the whole
miles.
Farm. Yep.
Right.
As I said earlier, I'm only managing a segment of that now, and I've got another farm that I'm working with that's managing another segment, but there's a lot of pipe there.
I guess so.
Especially when you consider pulling a vacuum on it, nothing can have a hole in it, even a small, tiny fracture from, you know, a nip from a squirrel. That takes the whole system down. I mean, we segment it, but that whole section, it will take down.
Wow, that is something.
It's a lot of policing work.
That's even more delicate than losing that one light on the Christmas tree, you know? I mean, really.
But both are important.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. And 11,000 taps in all?
Yeah, the farm has about 11,000 taps on it.
Wow, it just boggles the mind. It really does.
Like I said earlier, we're blessed to have some good soils that grow good maple trees. The whole of Loudoun Ridge does. And we're just very blessed to have that, and it's great to see. It's an awesome view from the farm. If you know, for those folks that come up, it's a great view to the west, and we can see over into Vermont and, you know, western New Hampshire, and it's just it's a gorgeous view, and it's great in the fall. We get awesome sunsets because we have a westerly view, and Been a beautiful place to live my whole life.
Your whole life? Yeah, at one spot, right? How many people can say that? You know.
Although I will say we had a couple days earlier in the week where that strong wind was up that wasn't quite as nice.
Right. So is the key, Howard, is the key the soil? Is that pretty much what it comes down to?
Yes, that's part of it, yeah. Certainly. You know, and we've worked hard over the generations of my family to weed and thin and cultivate the maples and remove the other species so that we're really promoting maple growth. And that has resulted in, just a hillside of maples. It's beautiful in the fall when the foliage changes.
I'll bet there are many people within the sound of my voice that have never visited, a farm like yours that produces maple syrup. I'm sure many people within the sound of my voice have never experience that.
Well, I encourage them to do so. It's really a great learning experience for a process that is so simple. It is just an awesome experience to see the new equipment.
You say it's simple. Yeah.
Well, it's a simple process. It really is. You're just taking the sap from the tree and you're removing the water. And it's something you can do, at home. Of course, you don't want to do it inside because you will take all the wallpaper off and everything will be sticky, but it is possible to do it. But we've just added technology to make it more efficient. And we use reverse osmosis where we filter out under pressure a lot of the water so that our boiling time is less, and it helps us mitigate the unstable fuel prices that...
Yep, we never know what's going to happen with them, do we?
That we don't.
Yeah. Howard Pearl is with us, Senator Howard Pearl, and we'll talk a little bit about his work in the New Hampshire State Senate as well. But this, I think, that maple sugaring and producing maple syrup is more interesting than that in some cases. But we'll take a break, and we'll be back with Senator Pearl right after these words. Kale and Company continues right here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It is Kale and Company live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Senator Howard Pearl is with us. And again, you can visit the senator and his lovely wife, Heather, at their wonderful farm, Pearl & Sons Farm, 409 Loudon Ridge Road in Loudon this weekend. You can visit them. Are you open on a daily?
Well, I'm not always there.
Yeah, okay.
Because of the other hat I wear, being in the state senate.
Right,
so,
right.
Always best, and I encourage folks if they want to come out on it, it's just to call ahead, and we'll do our best to accommodate anyone that would like to come.
There you go. But this weekend you'll be there, what, Saturday from 10 to 3?
Yeah, 10 to 3 Saturday, 11 to 3 Sunday. I mean, we'll be there a little more than that, too. Yeah. I'm going to try to run down a town meeting for just a few minutes to say hello to the folks in the community at 9, but I'll be certainly there to be open for 10.
You are a busy guy. There's no doubt about that. So... First term in the state senate.
Yes.
And is it like you thought it was going to be? Is it more work than you thought it was going to be? Just from that standpoint, how do you feel about your first term in the senate?
Oh, that's a great question, Ken. Yeah. And I get asked that a lot.
Because
I served 3 terms in the House.
Right.
And the big question I always get is, well, what's the difference between the Senate and the House?
Yeah.
While we do essentially the same work, of making laws and holding hearings and doing that process, both the House and the Senate have an equal process, an equal part in that process. The Senate's just very different. There's 24 of us. We're essentially a family. I come from a large family. Myself, I'm 1 of 7. Heather's 1 of 8. Mm. So we're very used to the large family dynamic. And essentially, the Senate is a large family. Those are my brothers and sisters that are there. And sometimes we just don't agree. And that's okay. And we have some lively, spirited conversations. But, when push comes to shove, we're still a big family. And we have a task that we have to complete, kind of the same way the farm works. I didn't always get along with my siblings or agree with everything in the direction we were going, but we always figured it out in the end, and we were able to accomplish the task.
Yeah.
The Senate does the same thing.
Yeah.
you know, we have our discussions and debates, and sometimes it appears to some that we're, you know, really at each other, but we just understand that, you know, everybody there wants to see New Hampshire be a great place,
right,
a great state, and we just sometimes have different ideas of how to get there, but in right. the end, we get there.
Exactly.
We have to, you know, every 2 years, we have to do this extensively through the budget process. You know, the fiscal aspect of mm-hmm. what we manage is probably one of the more important parts of it.
Sure.
Putting together a biennial budget. And but it, the other part of your question, is it what I expected? You know, it kind of is. As much as I could, I anticipated, because I had worked closely with the Senate when I was in the House. Mm-hmm. So I understood, at least to the level that I could, what the workload was. And it's probably 10 times what a House member is, depending upon the activity. Now, there are some House members that are really active. You know, the chair of education, he's there, and chair of finance, they're there on a very regular basis.
Sure. Yeah.
But the House has three divisions of finance. The Senate, there's seven of us that do it all. You know, we just, it's different.
Yeah.
But we parse the work out differently.
Yeah. But no big surprises.
Nope, not for me. I very much transitioned very, I feel very smoothly into it. I've enjoyed it. You know, you're working at a different level.
Yeah.
Probably the thing that maybe I didn't expect quite as much of is the interaction that we have with people coming into the office. It's much more so than when I was in the house.
Oh, really? Yeah.
People want to have discussions with you, and I'm very open to that. I always encourage everyone, you know, stop in, reach out to my aide, schedule a time if that's more convenient for you, and we'll do our best to accommodate everyone and make sure that the points and the discussions that they want to have, that we have them. And we need to. It's important that our government works that way.
Now, recently, I know you passed in the Senate an anti-sanctuary state bill.
Sanctuary city, yep.
A sanctuary city
yes.
bill. Okay, there is a difference there. Sanctuary city bill. So tell us what that means exactly and how it would be enforced if it passes the House.
Well, essentially what it says is that a city can't adopt a policy that allows it to not cooperate with the federal, like ICE detainer laws and things. Mm-hmm. So essentially, if a municipality has someone that they take into custody for whatever reason, then, you know, some violation that occurs, and they realize that there is a federal detainer out for that person because of their immigration status, then they need to contact and let the federal government come in and take care of, you know, taking that custody of that person from there. And it just essentially says that you can't ignore that. You know, immigration has become a really hot button issue. We've seen policies out of D.C. that have softened our southern border, and it's made it so that we've had a lot of crossings, far higher than normal. And these folks are just being released into the community with sometimes a court date 2, 3, 4 years out.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows if they're going to come back and do that. And while I firmly believe that most people that come here probably are looking for a better life and they're willing to contribute to the community, there are some that aren't. And we need to make sure that for our own protection of our communities and, you know, in our country, that we're making sure who's coming here. You know, immigration is a key, important issue. All of us came here from someplace.
Right, exactly. But they are just, you know, flowing in by the thousands. I think since 2020, I think there have been more than 8 million that have crossed our southern borders.
The number is staggering.
Yeah.
It is. And you know, when we're seeing an increased activity across our northern border as well. And again, I truly believe most of these people really want to come here for a better life.
Yeah.
And I want us to welcome them, but I want us to have a process, a legal immigration process that is there to make sure that we're keeping out those that have nefarious intent. We don't want that here.
Yeah, I mean, there was some controversy recently because Governor Sununu wanted more money to protect our interests at the northern border. And there is quite a northern border in New Hampshire, and that has to be protected as well.
Well, and the challenge is it's very rural and it's very mountainous. And it's hard sometimes for, you know, some of the traditional ways of using technology to kind of watch that. Some of them don't work well there. So it does require some boots on the ground. And we did put forth north of $1 million in the budget last year to help with our northern border security. And I know recently the governor was in asking the fiscal committee for $800,000, I believe it was, to send some reinforcements of our National Guard troops down on the southern border to help in that area as well. Listen, border security is an important issue for our country. That and energy policy are the two things that really drive what our economy looks like and what our security looks like. And it's important for us to make sure we have good policies in that area. And while many think this is a federal issue, it's really a state issue because the states, you're seeing many states, Illinois, even Massachusetts here, who have received a lot of these illegal aliens that are coming in, and they're causing just a lot of strain and burden on the system that's there.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And, without, secure borders, but we do not have a country.
That's correct.
Yeah.
It's important for us to have that.
Yeah, it truly is. And we see the differences that have taken place from one administration to another. And we talk about 8 million illegal immigrants coming into this country. It boggles the mind when you think 8 million. That's like the population of Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and let's say Maine combined.
Mm.
Which is mind-boggling.
Well, it's a lot of crossings, and again, I'm very much pro-immigration, but I want it to be done the right way.
I think everybody is, and then you're exactly right. It has to be done the right way. I think the people who are most upset about this, all the illegals that are coming in, are the ones who did it legally.
Absolutely.
And went through the process.
Yeah, and there's many that have, and they're a great asset to our country, especially in our industry of agriculture.
Yeah.
We've relied on immigrant labor a long time for many years. We're always struggling to get help, and we're looking for that. So,
and there is a process that is in place.
Yes,
where farms can access these people, and not only farms, but let's say hotels and restaurants as well from various foreign countries.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's an important workforce for us. And, we had New Hampshire had the first in the nation primary that we had back in January. And we had a lot of those candidates here looking, to make it to the top of the ticket and to get support from us. And it's one of the major questions that I put forward to many of the candidates is, what's your policy on immigration? And what happens once we secure the border? What do we do after that? What does that look like?
I don't think there's any question that it is the number one issue in the country today, no doubt about it.
I would agree.
I think it's gone past the economy, abortion, you name the other issues that are out there, which are many. But I think, immigration is right at the top of the list.
Yeah, that and energy policy, I would say, are probably, those are, the energy policy certainly is a pocketbook issue, and that's caused a lot of inflation. And so that's another one that I hear a lot from concerns from folks.
Sure, because that drives everything.
Absolutely.
Pun intended. we will take a break. Senator Howard Pearl is with us, and we will be right back. It's Kale and Company Live right here, WKXL. NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It is Kale and Company Live here on WKXL and NHTalkRadio.com. Senator Howard Pearl is with us. We were joined earlier by his lovely wife, Heather, who celebrated a birthday yesterday.
She did.
Yes, and I celebrated in style. That was terrific at work and at home. So she had a great day. And today, by the way, is Science Education Day. So we educated you a little bit today on this program about the process of making maple syrup. And this is Maple Weekend in the state of New Hampshire. So visit a local farm that does produce a maple syrup like the Pearl & Sons Farm at 409 Loudon Ridge Road in Loudon, a wonderful spot, and you will learn a lot there as well this weekend. And have the amount of farms that produce maple syrup declined in New Hampshire over the years?
I don't I don't have an exact count, but my feeling is no, not really.
Okay.
We have a lot of folks that are small operations,
yeah.
And they're fun to visit too, and many of them will be open as
yeah.
well. You know, they may not be part of the association, so they may not be on the website, but as you drive around, if you see a farm that has an open sign,
yeah.
sometimes it's a person who has 50 taps in their backyard, or maybe between them and their neighbor, they've got 50 or 100 taps, and
yeah.
it's just cool to stop. The,
sure.
the passion, you know, is the same for them about making this. It's just really neat. You'll probably see more technology if you visit a larger farm, but it's really impressive what everyone does in this industry. It's really it's just a part of New Hampshire, you know.
Right. Because I know we have lost a lot of dairy farms over
yes,
the years
have.
In the state.
And boy, we're going to lose a lot more, I'm afraid. That industry is really struggling as we've, you know, the national milk marketing order has not worked well for our region specifically, and it's made it a challenge. So, in the weather events that happened last year certainly put further strain on many of the vegetable and fruit producers as well, as we saw, you know, crop losses from the, there was a freeze that occurred in May last year that was later than normal.
Mm-hmm.
And it wiped out a good portion of our fruit crop,
wow.
or greatly, in some cases, it may not have completely taken it out, but it damaged it and made them so they aren't saleable quality. And so we saw some farms experience upwards of 80% loss on their fruit production. And then the excessive rain all summer really impacted a lot of the vegetable growers as well. Myself included.
Yeah. So that begs the question. After maple season is over, what do you do, Howard?
We convert right over into planting sweet corn, summer squash, zucchini, pumpkins, some winter squash, and plus we make a lot of feed hay, for various customers throughout the state. Many are horse, but some are a beef farm as well. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple of beef farms that we supply for, and we transition from one crop to the next and kind of slow down really in about November and December, and then we're, of course, at that point, we're checking lines for the next maple season. So there's never a dull moment.
That is for sure. No doubt about that. So getting back to the Senate, when does the term end? I mean, when does the session end, the Senate session?
Sure. We're elected for a two-year term, yeah. and the election is in November. We're sworn
yeah.
in December, and then so this December, we'll seat the new Senate with whoever is fortunate enough to gain the support of the public.
And are you running for re-election?
I will be running again.
All right, there you go.
District 17, I have 12 towns stretching from Northfield to Nottingham, essentially east of Concord, down through Canterbury, Loudoun, Barnstead, Pittsfield, Chichester, Allenstown, Pembroke, Deerfield. I don't know. I've probably forgotten somebody on my way through. Canterbury. I don't know if I mentioned Canterbury.
So you are running again.
I am.
And so before the end of the session, what are some of the things that are up for legislation and debate?
Sure. We're approaching crossover right now. And for those who don't know what crossover is, it's all the bills that started in the Senate, we're getting the hearings finished and completed, and they're being voted out of the committees and going for the full vote of the Senate. I think it's April 8th is the last date that we have to act on Senate bills, but it's the first week of April.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to see some of the House bills come over now. I chair and the Executive Department's Administration Committee. I vice chair Energy and Natural Resources, and I also sit on Finance. That's the other thing with the Senate versus the House. You sit on usually at least three committees.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're wrapping up our Senate bills, and we're starting to hold hearings on the House bills as they're coming over. Many of the things that I deal with are energy and natural resources we deal with, obviously electric things to do with electricity and anything that's energy, as well as most all of your agricultural issues and any of your state parks. A lot of those issues come through us as well in energy. ED&A, we deal with licensure issues and state retirement, things like that. And then obviously finance, we deal with any money that's spent in the state goes through finance. So we're kind of at the point now where we're sending our bills over to the House, and we're just starting to see the House bills. Many, again, what I'm dealing with are licensure issues. We've had a major reform with the Office of Professional Licensure and Certification. We use a lot of acronyms in the legislature. So we refer to it as OPLC. And we're dealing with a lot of those issues. But, you know, as far as the Senate as a whole, we discussed the immigration issues. We've had some mandatory penalty issues that came through for fentanyl. We're trying to stiffen those penalties to help deal with the fentanyl issue that's here in New Hampshire. And again, that's some of that is tied with the open borders policy. Sure. That's certainly allowing that freer movement of fentanyl to come across. Obviously, there are bad actors for people who are already U.S. citizens as well, but we're trying to make that so that those penalties are stiffer for those folks that are trafficking it into our state here, and hopefully we can slow down that supply and keep things safer for the residents of the state.
Yeah, the fentanyl is coming across the border like it never has before, and I guess part of the issue is that you never know what a seemingly harmless drug, even, you know, not even an illegal drug, may be laced with fentanyl.
Well, and that leads into the recreational marijuana conversation we're having as well. We're looking at, you know, again, that is coming. There's a bill coming over out of the House. I believe it's still in House Finance right now. I don't think I don't believe they've passed it out yet. And, you know, that will come to the Senate, assuming that it passes the House. Again, it passed the House out of the Policy Committee and out of Commerce, and it's gone to, gone to finance. They'll look at it, and then we'll, or maybe they went to Ways and Means. I forget on the House where they went to finance or Ways and Means. It may have gone, could have gone to either one, but it will come over to us, and we'll have to look at it as well. But you know that I look at that as a consumer protection issue too, because you're right. There's folks that are partaking of cannabis, whether legal or not, and the fentanyl lacing is really an issue. You know, they're not trying to take a drug of that magnitude, and it's causing some issues. So we'll have to see what comes over out of the House and how things look when it gets here to the Senate.
You've even seen medications that are laced with fentanyl that you wouldn't think, you know, you wouldn't give it a thought, like Percocet or whatever it might be.
Well, there's a lot of imitation stuff that's being made. You know, they're buying these pill presses and they're putting it into form. And what may look like a legal Percocet, you know, to someone that's purchasing it on the street, they don't know what it is. And that is concerning.
Yeah, it truly is. And, of course, the legalization of marijuana is still a very hot button issue.
It is.
In the state. I mean, there are those who believe it's a gateway drug to other things. And as you mentioned, it could be laced with fentanyl or other drugs that can kill you.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's really something to consider. I know the state wants to have it controlled like the liquor, and I don't know. How do you stand on it?
Well, that is one model we're looking at.
Yeah.
And again, I got to see what comes over from the House. But my viewpoint is it's a choice that citizens are making whether the government is allowing it or not.
Right.
And so we want to make sure that we are, you know, providing that protection if it's suitable for New Hampshire. Again, I would say one of my real big concerns is public consumption. I don't want New Hampshire to look like California or smell like California in the sense of the I've been to California very briefly, and the things I noticed is it smells like pot, and there's a lot of trash around, and I don't want that for New Hampshire. No. We have a beautiful, pristine state, and when we look at any of these policies, we want to make sure we're, you know, making sure that stays intact, and we're giving that some real serious consideration in the policies that we decide on here. So,
yeah, I was in Boston last night, and I know of where you speak.
Yes.
I mean, because, you know, marijuana is legal in Massachusetts, and unfortunately, it's everywhere.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's different than alcohol in the sense of the contact issues from one person consuming, how it can affect someone around them. So public consumption is really a big thing for me that I'm looking at. I want to make sure we get this right if we're going to do it.
No question. Well, Howard Pearl, we appreciate the time you've spent with us this morning explaining the maple industry and talking about issues in the Senate.
Absolutely.
Much appreciated, and thanks to your wife, Heather, as well, for joining us. Hopefully, the next time she can stay for the whole hour.
But, well, let's hope so. She had another commitment, as you said, and it's always great to be on, Ken, and I appreciate the opportunity to come talk with you and your listeners.
Thank you, Senator Pearl. We appreciate it. And again, I want to remind you, our show tomorrow will be on Facebook Live. Just go to Facebook, WKXL NH Talk Radio, and find it there. Thanks again to Senator Pearl. And remember, folks, to always look on the bright side of life. Have a great Thursday, everyone.